Hello and welcome back to Pints and Pairings. I am Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop Ed Ed.
And I'm Jason Hendrick, the hungry man from Everybody's Hungry.
We have got a great show for you today.
Well, at the minimum, we have a great show for us today.
Right. And if you're not drinking IPAs with us, then, you know, I guess I feel sorry
for you. It is 10:30, but we do have listeners across the country, so it may be 1:30. Maybe they're doing IPA lunch in the Midwest.
However, if you're looking at Hawaii, what is it? Is it 3 hours difference?
So, open up with breakfast.
It might only be 7 o'clock.
There's nothing wrong with a loco moco and an IPA.
I agree with you. Definitely.
I'm on board.
All right. So we're going to start off. There's BJCP category number 14.
We're moving right along, too. There's 23 that we're going to be profiling, core styles. So we just crossed the halfway point.
We have. And
downward slide.
Right.
Except all the beers get higher in ABV on the way.
If we'd only counted the 23, then we've crossed halfway. But I know that there's going to be, you know, give or take another 20.
Depending on our mood.
Right, depends on how it goes. So we're starting off with the English IPA, which is style 14A. The original light beer. Everyone has certainly heard where the term IPA came from. And you're wrong. whoever told you that is only partially correct with this. And if you go back and look at the historical ABVs of beers in the early 1800s, the IPA was actually one of the lighter in ABV. So, you know, you had porters, you had stouts, you had some of these other beers that were coming out of, and especially porters, pre and during the Industrial Revolution. They needed these beers to, one, have a caloric intake in order to fuel.
Yeah, and we've talked about that. People, you know, don't discount the caloric intake of a beer on multiple levels. Obviously, as you know, you just sit around on the couch and drink beer all day long, the calories will add up eventually. But recently I did the half marathon here in Ventura, and we talked about on our morning show with Tom and Sandy, the trend right now of finishing races with a beer, kind of a celebratory beer. All the Spartans do it, and some of the marathons do it. Even there's some half marathons and marathons that are themed after beer, so you're getting stops along the way with beer. There's a certain level of, like you say, caloric intake and carbohydrates, some fuel that you're getting out of a beer. There's some proteins you're getting out of the beer just by the natural brewing process. But keep in mind, too, beer is a diuretic. So it will dehydrate you at some point. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about these workers, you know, we've talked in the past about workers in the farm fields and that as well. And the monks that are out, you know, hundreds of years ago working in the fields, and they had their beer available. You still have to stay hydrated. You still have to have some other fuel at some point. You can't live on beer alone, although we try.
I have given it the old college try, as they say. So back to the historical documentation of beers, the term IPA actually didn't even come out until after nearly 80 years after the pale ale had been introduced into India. So India had all these different kinds of beers and really harsh alcohols, you know, so these high proof alcohols that were making people go blind because the distillation processes weren't tuned in. They were making people seriously stupid drunk. And then, you know, here comes the temperance movement coming out of this. And then you have porters. They'd been exporting porters to India for quite some time. Who wants to drink a porter when it's 98 degrees and 100% humidity?
Bueno.
Nobody wants to do that. So here comes a golden colored beer or a copper like what we have here. It's highly carbonated. It has a high hopped character. So it's making it refreshing already. And then what are people naturally going to do? You know, as soon as this was introduced, it became a hit and people wanted to drink this. I guess the mythology behind it is that brewers in England were sitting back and consciously developing a recipe for this beer to make it all the way around. No, they didn't know if it was going to make it. It happened to, and so they continued to do it.
And how many times have we talked about the travel and the shipping times, how they affect beer? Right. You know, we have to be conscious of that. And you want your beer to be fresh. That's when it's the crispest, the most flavorful, and great aroma, unless you're aging a, you know, heavy, like a stout or a porter or something. But when you have these crisp, citrusy aroma and floral type beers, you want them to stay true to their freshest brew.
Well, and the one thing about it, too, was just that the hops, which is a natural preservative, helped keep this beer fresh. Now, it took 6 months to get all the way around the, whatever it is, Cape Horn, down around Africa, and then back up the other side. So, I mean, it took a long time for it to get there. And it just happened to get there in good enough shape. Now, that's not saying that they didn't start making it maybe a little hoppier or a little lighter or a little more alcohol as it went through. But that was not the it did not start off with this conscious effort, let's brew this beer in order to get there. In fact, back in its home, it didn't have a very big following at all. People were still drinking porters. And you can imagine, I mean, here you go, England. When I think of England, I don't think of sunshiny, warm days. I think of a fog and rain. And I want a meat pie and I want a porter.
Yeah, I like meat pies.
So anyway, there's all kinds of things to back this up. It's not just me. Mitch Steele from Stone has written a book about it. Pete Brown, who is a writer from England, actually made the travel with a keg of beer and wrote about this as the, all the way around.
Interesting.
So some really good reads about it to back all this up. Not to mention Ray Daniels, the Cicerone inventor, the head CEO, is on board with this one too. So so just kind of things are changing a little bit. The historical take on it is coming to a truer sense of what it is. Just
that's great. I think it gives people a better appreciation for the beer they're drinking as well. Looking directly at the Sam Smith that we're trying and using as our base kind of opener, you actually can see the styles merging. You know, this is a lot of English pale without the hoppiness. You get the biscuity, the little bit yeasty. You get a nice mellow profile. It's not super hop forward. You're not getting a punch in the face with flowers and pine, but you get a nice hop presence and a little bit on the palate, just to remind you that it is an IPA, but a lot of English pale is coming through.
The English hops are they're floral, but there's an earthiness to it as well. And we've talked about this in a couple other ones. Even with the porter, there's a sharp hop flavor as well, coming from the English hops, whatever they're using in it, in the beer. There's a little bit of sweetness from the esters, so just a tiny bit of a fruitiness.
There's a little pinch of mushroom in this one too, though. It's really nice, getting back kind of that earthiness, but without being a gritty peat kind of focus. Mm-hmm. This is a real nice balance. You're getting multiple layers of flavor,
right? And this is because it's an English one too. Letting it warm up just a little bit, air out, and we've had this out for probably 25, 30 minutes somewhere there. So it's doing a nice job warming up. There's still a really nice carbonation in it. It's sharp. It
keeps a good
bright
head.
It keeps it pops off the tongue. There is a really nice sweetness, and so when you're talking about the biscuity flavors, that's a really good pick, because I wanted to jump right away into the sweeter aspect of the malt, but the biscuit is definitely in there.
I have my first pairing.
Okay, let's do it.
I want something creamy. I want like a fettuccine alfredo with chicken and like portobello mushroom slices. So maybe even some fresh herbs. So I'm trying to draw and complement each of those layers, or resonate each of those layers we've described so far. That kind of creamy, buttery sauce, and then, you know, nice starchiness of the noodles, you get the earthiness of the mushroom, you get a protein, a little sweetness from the chicken, you get some fresh herb to highlight those hops and play with the hops. I want some right now.
Do you realize you just paired an English beer with Italian cuisine?
I did.
They're one of the,
I think I'm proud. I'm not sure if I should be.
I think you should be, definitely. the especially the creamier sauces are a little easier to come into that, as opposed to a tomato sauce, which wouldn't work nearly as well with this. But, you know, we talk about certainly picking traditional food pairings, and you can't go wrong with it. And if you looked at it, you're talking fish and chips, you're talking meat pies, you're talking whatever. Yeah. And this beer is just going to cleanse all of that.
And hopefully for my listeners and your listeners, but from the foodie side, You guys have realized by now, after all of our episodes, I don't always like to go mainstream and go with the obvious, because I think there's so many options and so many choices out there, especially with a lot of innovative chefs and innovative brewers these days. You can get creative and still have awesome pairings. You don't have to just stick to the same old, same old.
I agree with you. And your suggestion of the fettuccine and also pulling out that herbal or the mushroom kind of notes into it, I think are... is a fantastic idea. You know, you could go nice salty, a little Parmesan on top of it too. That salt will help kind of brighten the beer flavors as well. And this beer has enough hops, enough alcohol, and enough carbonation too that after that sip or after that bite, this is going to wash everything clean.
In every episode, we get more and more in tune, because you just talked about saltiness, and I'm going to stick in the perceived Italian family a little bit. I want this with some cantaloupe and prosciutto, just as a little, you know, hors d'oeuvre or something walking around on a tray. Give me a glass of this English IPA and some nice prosciutto and melon, and I think you've got a cool pairing too.
Yeah, pulling out just a little bit of the fruitiness that is kind of underneath all of those layers as well, that's coming from the fermentation or from the yeast side, and that melon will pull that out as well. There's a definite base in order there for you to do that. Looking maybe into dessert sides too, as you know, there's a pronounced caramel-like sweetness as well. And so anything that you have some kind of caramelized sugars in it, caramel, and I'm just trying to think, it's any example is eluding me right now, but thinking about this kind of leads into something that we've talked about before, where you want to make sure you drink these beers because you're not necessarily going to get that pronounced caramel flavor out of every other English IPA.
I'll throw you a whirly one.
All right.
Because I've had it in the past, and the resort that I've had it at no longer makes it. But how about a nice lavender cheesecake with a burnt caramel drizzle?
That would work very well. You've got the cheese, the texture of that as well.
And a little bit of a tangy bite from the cheese, I think, would cut through some of the velvety mouthfeel we're getting, especially as this beer is warming up, those caramely malty notes that we were talking about.
Well, and one of the traditional pairings for this would be a cheddar cheese as well. And so you've got that sharp flavor, the sharp in the cheesecake. I've lost where I was going to go with that, but
you're getting
having to go back to the cheesecake though, and being able to cut through the cheese as well. You've got just a tiny bit of sweetness in the cheesecake itself, but then a very light caramel drizzle would be delicious.
And we're running close to time, so I want to make sure I get my last dig, because we usually do desserts at the end. But I'm feeling very hungry today. I'm feeling like some filling and satiating kind of meals. I want this with a grilled swordfish, with some kind of citrus marinade, maybe even a citrus Pur Blanc if we want to bring a little bit of that buttery, creamy texture back in. But I think a nice, meaty, firm white fish with something that has a little bit of a citrus punch and a little bit of a velvety butter undertone, that would be a good start. And maybe we could even throw in, going to some of Genevieve's cuisine, a nice roasted vegetable that's got not too green of a texture. I mean, broccoli, I think, would work well, but something maybe a little different, maybe even like a parsnip, grilled parsnip, where you get a little more of that herbaceous, crisp bite.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of salt in the roasting process would help heighten the parsnip in a great way to go against this beer.
It happens every time. as I'm pondering the parsnip and certainly in my CSA box, those are things that I see throughout, and I'll have to remember that the next time that they come through. I don't generally grill them. I usually eat those raw.
Interesting. Raw would be great too. You know, jicama is another underused ingredient that I think would be cool with this, because you get some crisp apple texture, a little bit of starchiness from the potato essence, and the sweetness as well. I would try grilling that parsnip, though. Or maybe even slice it real thin and do them as chips. A little parsnip chip, a little fresh sea salt over the top, and a little drizzle of malt vinegar, bringing it back to the English roots and kind of the natural pairing. You could have a great snack with this English IPA.
There seems to be a theme, too, you know, and each one of these comes back to a sharp sort of flavor throughout, you know. And even when we first started describing the beer with the hops that are used, I talked about kind of a sharp hop flavor. Then we go to cheesecake with a sharp flavor, cheddar cheese with a sharp flavor. Then we come back to vinegar. So, you know, something to keep in mind, especially a way to contrast against this, but in a really pleasant way because of the amount of sweetness that is residual sweetness. That's
when, especially as I finish my glass and, you know, it's warmed up to a place where we really want to be conscious of not letting it get too warm. But as it does warm up, it is a softer, more subtle profile. It's a little bit muddled, and you don't want a food profile that's going to be too subtle and muddled as well. I think that's why we're getting those contrasting and those sharper flavors to seesaw back and forth with, rather than having two dishes that are going to be very creamy, too creamy or too buttery or too bready, biscuity, and the flavors are just muddled together. You don't want to do that. You want each of the pairings, the food and the beverage item, to stand up on their own, but then work well together.
Right. And one of the things that we haven't talked about with this one is the serving temp. And because it's an English style beer, generally brewed in such a way, the recipe formulation is in such a way that you're going to be drinking it warmer than what most people are outside of the beer geek world are used to drinking.
You know, our buddy Rory would love this beer on cask.
Right. So you talk about a cask conditioned beer, which is going to be warmer. It's already it has lost that the carbonation bite, the brightness, and it's a little warmer. And so what you just got done talking about is something you want to pay attention to if you're doing a beer dinner with this, that if you want this served at the right temp, as opposed to coming right out of the refrigerator where it's going to be this really bright and intense flavor, this is going to be a much more mellow flavor, and plan accordingly. Yeah. You know, if you've got something really, really creamy, like what you're talking about, as this beer warms up, these two are going to start to really resonate with each other, and it may become overpowering.
Yeah, either way. I think you get to a point where you're, especially in the mouthfeel, you're just melting them together. You know, you're going to start losing the distinctness between the two. So it's been, I think we blew right through this one.
Yeah, we've hit all the points that I wanted to, and we got an Italian an Italian pairing with an English beer. So that's a plus whenever we can do something.
You can get
like
those
that.
Two at the table, and in a congenial way, I think we're doing something right.
Get an Englishman and an Italian together. Yeah, and they can play nice. Sure, everything's good. So this has been BJCP style category 14A. English
IPAs.
English IPAs, thank you. And, you know, I said it last week, and I'll say it again this week, that I love these. There's so much flavor and everything else with them. But my love is coming up.
Let's move on to it.
The next ones where
excited.
They're just boom, hop, blow in your face, and just kind of get
welcome
crazy.
To the West Coast, everyone. We'll see you the next episode.
That's right. So I'm Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop That Said.
I'm Jason Hendrick, the Hungry Man from Everybody's Hungry, and this has been Pints and Pairings.
And we'll remind you to eat, drink, and be happy.
There you go.
All right. We'll
see you at the next pour.
All right.